With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Matt Taylor, footballer, I'll play anywhere.
Matt, when you were a boy, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to work with my dad. He's an architect. So, yeah, football was never really on the radar for me because at the age of, what, I've been 13, 14, got released from Oxford for being too fat.
Really?
Got offered a contract as a goalkeeper, but that wasn't for me. So I decided that I'd just go and play football with my mates. And did my GCSEs, chose my A-levels. Was never really on the cards. And playing a district game. And the one of the scouts who happened to be a manager for us just asked me and my dad whether or not I'd like to go for a trial at Luton. So I said to my dad, what should we do? And he said, yeah, we'll take you along. So I went along, I think there was around 40 boys. I played left back, didn't really play left back very much. And they offered me to go back and train with them for a week. So I went back and trained for a week. And at this point, it was the point where it was the summer holidays for school. So that was okay.
How old were you, 14?
16 at the point, yeah. Okay. I hadn't, as I say, I left playing for a professional football club at 14, I think it was. So I just went and played football with my mates for 2 years. My dad ran the team. And then, they basically asked me whether or not I wanted to take a two-year YTS. And at that point, I was undecided because I'd chosen my A-levels. They got the GCSE results that I needed. And I sat down with my mum and dad at the time, and they said to me, look, Matt, it's 2 years. Give it a go. If it works, great. If it doesn't, you can go back and sit your A-levels. As I say, the rest is history. So.
Yeah. And so your parents were your parents a real key part of it, like supportive for you?
Very supportive, yeah. I'm really lucky. I mean, not only did I have really supportive parents. My mum's parents used to run me here, there and everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, so it was always, there would always be mum and dad watching if my sister wasn't taking part in sports. She did a lot of athletics. But it was always one, and then there would always be Nan and Gramp watching on the sideline as well. So
right.
I've got quite a few VHS tapes upstairs that my Gramp took of me when I was a lot younger, because he got a camcorder. He was one of the first people I ever knew to buy a camcorder.
That was massive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah. And I got all the tapes upstairs.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, which is cool. So, no, I was really lucky. And then when I signed at Luton, you obviously moved, so I left home at 16. Mm. But my Gramp would be the one that would always say to me, look, Matt, me and your Nan will run you back to Luton on a Sunday night.
Nice.
Yeah, we'll take you here. They'd come to every game, regardless of where it was.
Right.
You know, so I was really lucky. I had a, you know, fantastic family network and support.
And you said when you were 14 or whatever, you weren't that bothered. Presumably when you went to Luton and you got signed on YTS, something had to change in your mentality, because you need to work really hard and be dedicated to become a professional. Do you have an idea in your mind when that happened?
It's the opportunity. I remember the first couple of days I went in there, it was a huge shock, because it was playing football every day, right? And you only ever did it on weekends, or you had a kickabout with your mates.
Sure.
And it was for me, just thinking, right, if I'm going to do this, I've got to really give it a go. So I just, do you know what? I tried my best. And about the age of 15, I remember, 15, 16, I entered a county championship for an 800 metres. And it was at that point I knew, bloody hell, I can run.
Right.
Because I won it by a mile, and I never run 800 metres before, and I was never expected to do any well, to do any good. And I won it by a mile.
Right.
And it was that I kind of thought, I can run here.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, that's probably been a key strength of mine for the last 20 years, being able to run.
And so at what point, what age did you break into Luton's first team?
So the first season I joined, we played I played every Saturday for the youth team. But probably about halfway through that season, the club were having a bit of problems with injuries, and they said to me, would you come and train with the first team? So I went and trained with the first team. Well, 2 weeks after training with the first team, Lenny Lawrence, who was the manager, sat me down in his office. I was just 17, and said, look, we want to offer you a professional contract. I was like, right, okay.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Where do I sign? And he said, look, it's non-negotiable. These are the terms. It's like, yeah, whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
You didn't have an agent or anything like
that? No, nothing like that. No. So I just went, right, whatever it is, where do I sign?
Yeah.
I think it was 200 quid a week or something, right? And bear in mind, the YT at that point was £42.50.
You're loving it, yeah.
Yeah, I was. The only problem was that you have to pay your own digs when you sign your professional forms. So
yeah.
It was a tenner a night. But no, I signed the contract, and the club went into receivership during that off-season. Lost quite a few players, couldn't pay the wages. So we came back in for pre-season, and it was chucked in, Matt, here you go, you sink or swim.
Right.
I played every pre-season friendly, scored a couple of goals in pre-season at 17, did really well. First game of the season, I made my debut away at Notts County. So
when you said beforehand that you weren't particularly bothered, you mean that you loved football, but you weren't necessarily bothered about being a professional footballer?
Well, I didn't think it was ever an option.
Right. Okay.
So what was the point in worrying about it?
Yeah, okay,
you know, what's the point in
setting
my
sights? But you always loved playing.
I loved playing football, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you must remember. I remember kids can't do it now. Hmm. At school holidays, your mum would say, you'd have your breakfast, you'd shove it down, she'd say, sit there for 20 minutes until it goes down.
Yeah, right?
You'd
yeah,
sit
yeah,
there,
yeah,
wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Like, banging. Because all you wanted to do, we lived in a close, all you wanted to do was go and play football. There was three boys who we used to play football with, all older than me, used to play football, and then until you heard your mum shout, lunch, you went in for lunch, you sat down again for 20 minutes after you'd shoved your food down your mouth, didn't you?
Yeah.
And then you have your dinner. And I just remember in the summer, it used to be when the streetlights came on, I used to have to go in.
My mum used to say that. So yeah. Come in when the streetlights
That was probably half past nine, quarter to ten.
Yeah.
So all I did was play football.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't any... I was never into computers. I think we had a... What was it?
Is that
we had a Mega Drive.
Mega Drive.
We had a Sega Mega Drive as a kid. Yeah. But never really interested in that. Because all I wanted to do was play football. But then, I could say, at 14, I kind of fell out of love with it. Because it wasn't... As I say, a lot of the lads got taken on and I didn't. So at that point, dealing with sort of failure, which is what it felt to me, I just kind of thought, you know, I'm going to go and enjoy myself. So that was what I mean. It was never an option. But then when the opportunity came around, I wasn't bothered about being a footballer at 14. Because I'd just been released. All I wanted to do was go and enjoy myself with my mates, play on a Saturday, play on a Sunday. But
and were you stand out good then on a Saturday and Sunday? Were you the best player at your school, for example?
Yeah, but never. But the thing was that so I was 16, still at secondary school, and we had a local team called Abingdon United, and I got we played in an under 18s league that my dad used to run, and we were I was what 16, played in this, and I'd play for the first team, and they were Hellenic League, so you used to get paid, right?
Right, yeah.
So we used to get a tenner if we drew,
right? Yeah,
we used to get 20 quid if we won,
yeah,
and nothing if we lost,
right.
So yeah, it put me kind of gave me the right work ethic, but also that comes from seeing the fact that my dad would leave the house every morning at 8 o'clock and wouldn't be home till 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
to give us as kids, you know, what we wanted.
So to zero in on that hard work point. How I mean, we got to the point where you're at Luton at 17. Mm. How important? Put a percentage on it. How important is the sort of relationship between talent and hard work? What because I think that football fans maybe overestimate how important the talent part is, yeah, and underestimate how much the hard work is. For you, how much hard work was it?
I can't tell you, yeah, how many players were better than me,
yeah,
but didn't make it,
yeah,
because they didn't make the sacrifice.
Yeah,
you asked when didn't make the sacrifices, they couldn't be bothered to do the hard work, but the opportunity. And it was always about playing football, right? That's what my career's always been about. It's never been about anything else. But the opportunity to be successful playing professional football was just one that I was not going to let go. So I didn't let go and I tried my best. And I tell my kids now, anything they do, don't care how you do, just try your best.
Yeah.
But the talent thing, yeah, so many lads from my youth team that were far more talented than me but didn't make it because they weren't willing to make the sacrifices that were needed to be a professional
and
footballer.
As a young person, like it's quite interesting how you have to make decisions about quite big decisions about your career and about how hard you're going to work, for example, when you're at a very young age. When I was 17, I was obviously never talented enough to be a footballer, but at 17 I didn't really want to know. I didn't want anyone to tell me what to do. Mm. But at that age, really, if you don't do it then, it's very unlikely you're going to have any sort of career. You've got to make that decision as such a young person, not even legally an adult. And that's quite unique, I think, among industries.
Yeah, but it sets the grounding for you.
Yeah.
You know, at the time when I was a YT, you did all the jobs. I remember we had a coach called John Moore. And my job was sweeping the tunnel at Luton. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's AstroTurf. It's not particularly the easiest thing to do. And the away team dressing room, along with your pro's boots. But the away team dressing room, you clean it, and I mean clean it, right? Mm. And he'd come along and he'd go, nope, dirty, do it all again. You have to do the whole thing again, right? Sweep the stands, you do the whole thing again. But the onus was on the hard work, and then not the reward, but the good part was there was a little gym at Luton and you used to go and play head tennis. And the lads, they're having so much fun in there, but what they don't realise is that actually what it's doing, it's teaching you for your first touch. So when that ball comes in and it's smashed off the wall and he smashes it to you,
yeah,
and you think it's a laugh, it's not.
Yeah.
It's serious.
Yeah.
But it's not until you get older that you realise that.
I read a while back that the All Blacks still clean the dressing room after
they themselves. They do. They sweep the sheds, yeah.
I remember Thierry Henry saying in a studio, Sky Sports studio the other week about, they were talking about Sido Berahino, saying about how talented he is and everything. Mm. And Henry sort of ended the conversation, said, look, since when has talent got you anywhere?
Counts for nothing.
Yeah. It gets you in the door, but it'll get you out the door pretty quick again if you don't work hard as well.
Problem.
Yeah.
Because why, as a manager or as a coach, am I going to say, oh, it's all right, I'll let him get away with this because he'll only do 4 runs, but everybody else will do 6 because he can't be bothered.
But what if he's a really special player? Really special.
If he's a match winner.
Yeah.
Depends on what level you're at. But then the argument is, if he's a match winner and what have you, do you sacrifice him for the good of the group? Mm. So for the good of everybody else? Or do you tell everybody else he's the best player so he doesn't have to do as much as you? If it was me personally, I've never been in a dressing room like that.
Right.
Ever. And if there is one like that, there's only so much you can get away with and then he's gone.
Right. So back to Luton then. So you start at Luton.
Yep.
17.
Yes.
You have a good season. I mean, tell people listening what sort of season Luton had at that point.
The first season was in League One, or the equivalent of League One now, and I played 46 games that season, played every game. Mm-hmm. So that was fantastic grounding. Mm-hmm. And Lenny left, unfortunately. Lenny Lawrence. So I think we had Ricky Hill came in and we got relegated the following season to League Two, which was a shame with everything with the club. Mm. But then the following season, which was my third and last season at Luton, we finished second in League Two. Brilliant season.
Yeah.
So much fun, yeah, brilliant. So, loved it, played, must have played 140, 150 games. I don't know the exacts, but it would have been around that number.
And then every club in England wanted you. Basically. They did, didn't they, really? I mean,
a few. I mean, the problem was is that I think that I'd run my course at Luton in terms of I wanted to test myself. But I'd only ever played week in, week out. So I could have gone to the Premier League and I chose not to.
Do you know can you remember what clubs?
Yeah, I could have gone to West Brom.
Yeah.
And I turned it down because it was never about money, right? Yeah. Football's never been about money for me.
Yeah.
I ended up signing for Portsmouth on the same contract that Luton had offered me.
Oh, right, okay. Right?
Yeah. So it was never about money. I met Harry and my dad and I met Harry and we went to meet him in London and just said, yeah, fancy this. Didn't even take into account that Portsmouth nearly got relegated the season before. I just kind of got sold the dream by Harry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine a lot of people like that.
I got sold the dream,
but
the dream became a reality.
Yeah. And it was 750,000. I know players don't care about that, but Joe Kinnear was pretty pissed off at the time.
He was, he wasn't happy,
He said, I think, at least Dick Turpin had a mask on when he did that.
He wasn't happy, Joe. And I love Joe.
That was before these
trials. Well, they didn't want it. The thing was, is that because Portsmouth and Luton negotiated, if they couldn't come to an agreement, it had gone to tribunal.
Yeah.
But they came to an agreement of
that
750 grand.
And I say that players don't care about transfer fees, but presumably you'd have wanted the most money to go to Luton as possible because they've done a lot for your career.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, and especially with the fact that the club were still not hugely financially stable. It was, I would have liked more money to have gone to them, but ultimately, I'm not going to lie to you, I'm quite selfish, and we all are as footballers, and because of the environment you're in on a daily basis, if you're not selfish, you're not going to be successful, and that's not suggesting that you're not part of a team.
Yeah. But you've got to make the right decision for yourself.
Yeah.
And how did you feel when you turned up at Portsmouth? What did it feel like? Was the standard different? Was it a different experience completely? Or was it more of the same?
It was different. But you've got to remember, what was I? I'd have been 19, I think, nearly 20. You've got to remember, I'd just come off a season where I'd been successful. For three previous seasons, I'd played every week. So I didn't know any different other than success. So call it naivety, I'd call it no fear. And I didn't have any fear because everything I'd always done, you know, you'd risen, albeit we'd been relegated to League Two. But the level was never a problem. It was still the fact that I'm just being a professional footballer. So to go and play for Portsmouth and for Harry. And then not only that, but after leaving League Two, to turn up and Paul Merson be sat in the dressing room. I mean, I'd only ever seen him on TV.
Yeah, okay.
So it was just a whole surreal experience and the whole thing kind of, I just didn't really get. I remember phoning my dad. I said to him, "Dad, you never even believe he was in the dressing room." Because at that point, you are still football fans, aren't you?
Yeah, right? Of course. Yeah.
Albeit they're
workmates. Yeah.
And they're teammates.
Yeah.
But you're just a football fan.
Yeah.
You're never going to guess who's coming here, Dad. Shaka Hislop.
Yeah.
And these type of people. And
but I went to pretty much every home game that season. And I remember you hit the ground running, to be fair. I mean, it wasn't difficult. It didn't seem difficult for you. So the difference between League Two, at the top end of League Two, and into the Championship didn't feel too bad.
No, but then I was lucky because I had some really good players around me who experienced and helped me a lot. Because at the time, I was only 20 years old or 19, 20 years old. So they really helped me a lot. And that was a big thing. But, you know, it comes back to, did I believe in myself? Yeah. Because everything I'd done the previous 3 years had kind of backed that up.
Yeah.
I just thought, well, you know, what have I got to lose? What's the worst that can happen?
So there was you weren't intimidated at any point for the first training session or the first game or anything like that? You just felt,
no nervousness, but not intimidation, no.
You didn't think at any point, I don't know if I'm going to be good enough in this session?
No.
Okay.
No. I've always been relatively confident. And I think if you're not, you get swallowed up because it's an intense world, you know, football.
Do you think some players aren't as confident as they need to be?
I think some don't have enough self-belief, yeah.
Yeah.
And why they don't have that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then again, that comes down to, so you look at Harry, for argument's sake, at that time, he's a fantastic man manager.
So what's your sort of overriding memories of that promotion season at Portsmouth?
The injury I got, I had a bone spur on my heel, and it was probably with about 8 games to go, and I remember Harry saying to me, look Tails, we need you.
Yeah.
I said, look, Gaffer, I'm in pain. He said, look, don't train all week. You can run.
Yeah.
Just have a jab and play on a Saturday. So I did that for 4 or 5 weeks. And
do you regret that now?
Nope.
No, it worked okay.
I scored the goal at Leicester and I had a jab. So
yeah, cool. Okay, right.
Trained
all
week. So.
Do you remember that home game against Leicester?
Yeah, with all the water.
Yeah, the waterlogged pitch. Yeah.
It shouldn't have gone on, should
no,
it? But
no.
It did.
Right.
So it was a long road back, you know. But it made me a lot stronger as a person.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. And I remember making my debut. I think it was away. My debut in the Premier League. I think it was away to Birmingham City. And I remember walking on the pitch and I wasn't really fit and thinking, without using the F word, thinking, what is this?
Mm.
This is a lot quicker than I'm used to.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is going on here?
Yeah. How much of that was the injury, though, do you think?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I hadn't played for 6 to 7 months.
Yeah.
So a lot, yeah. But then I think part of it was me in my head because the Premier League was the pinnacle.
Mm.
So not only was I stepping out in the Premier League, I was stepping out in the Premier League having not played football for 6 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was tough.
And there was a change in formation for Portsmouth then. Without getting too like tactically boring for listeners, Portsmouth moved to a 4-4-2, which meant immediately, at least on paper, you didn't have a role straight away. So you had to really work hard to find yourself a position, right?
I did, yeah, and that was tough. But I've always backed myself and I got back in and... Yeah, I think it was relatively successful, I would say.
I would agree. And and just fast forwarding a little bit. So for me, and obviously you may feel different, but for me, your best season was in 05-06.
Okay.
The season that Redknapp came back.
Yeah.
And you scored...
What, the Great Escape, you mean?
Yeah, the Great Escape and all those goals you scored.
You mean the one where we managed to... We found a spade and dug ourselves out from about 15 feet under?
What was that like as a player?
Crazy.
But
by Christmas, what were we, 10 or 12 points adrift, weren't we?
But fans will want to know, I think, what the mentality has to be from the playing staff point of view.
We signed a few players. I think at that time, did we sign, was it Mendes, Pedro, people like that?
Yeah.
Sean Davis, Wayne Routledge. So Harry, you know, he waved his magic wand as he did.
Yeah, yeah.
Got a few players in.
Yeah.
And just the belief. But didn't Harry come back from Southampton?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
So kind of it was like, and then... He came back, and I just remember kind of thinking, fuck it.
Yeah, okay.
What is, excuse my
No,
language,
of course, no, no,
right?
no, don't worry.
What is
yeah.
the worst that can happen? Because we're going to get relegated as it is.
Yeah.
We were lucky with the teams that we played in terms of, I remember playing West Ham, and they had the Carling Cup final, I think, so they rested a few. But we won one. Do you know what the turning point was? Was that goal that Pedro got against Manchester City?
Yeah, Fran, where they're coming together at two players, he comes away with it, Rolf's in the bottom corner.
It was just...
That was a big turning point.
That was a huge turning point. And then also the Sunderland game when we, I think it was Kevin Kyle, was it? Who for some reason just handballed it. There was no need for him to...
Is that the 4-1 win?
No, this was at home.
Oh, that's the... Oh, yeah, okay, right. The 4-1 was a goal when you scored the goal,
but
right?
we crossed... It was a corner.
That's right.
I might even put it in. Corner and then he's for some reason put his hand in the air with like a minute to go.
So we had some decisions, right?
Yeah, with a minute to go.
Yeah.
And you know what, right? Everyone says to me, oh, Tails, were you going to take the penalty? I was like, nope. I said there was not anything else in my head other than go and get that ball and take that penalty.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing is you can miss, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Go and get that ball and put it away. And
I
had to wait a while. And I remember when it went in, it almost went in and it was like, we can do this. For me personally, I can't talk for everybody else.
Yeah.
But the mood around the place was unbelievable. And then going up to Wigan and doing it with a game to go.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Ridiculous, yeah.
And I think it's interesting for fans, I think, to know what the players think, because I think this is wrong, but I'm in a different position to most football fans, I suppose. But I think that fans think that players, not necessarily a player like yourself, who's always worked really hard.
Don't care, yeah?
Yeah, not don't care, but I just think they care in a different kind of way. Because for them, it is a career as well. And for
it's
them,
a job. Yeah.
They're going to have to make a decision, whatever happens in the summer, to go and do something else, maybe. And I think there's a feeling around football fans, and you'll know this because you're a football fan as well, that the club you've got, you're stuck with it. It ain't their option. We haven't got an option to go and support someone else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it'll be interesting for them to know just how much it matters in the dressing room.
Well, it mattered to me.
Hmm.
That's all I can tell.
But did you look around players and think, I don't know how much it means to them?
I've done that all my career. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Do that now.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, but then again, it wouldn't do for us all to be the same, would it?
No, I guess not. And then at the end of that season, that summer you signed a new deal at Portsmouth?
Yeah.
There's a lot of speculation.
Yeah.
A lot of
nearly left.
Okay, which teams came in? Spurs?
I've got a good story about Spurs, but I'll tell you that in a minute. No, so there was a few clubs. I think it was West Brom was one of them. There was a few, but it was never really Fulham, and he went to Fulham. But again, it wasn't about. It would have been a better move financially, yeah.
But Portsmouth came in and gave you a new deal, didn't they?
They did, yeah. They gave me a new deal. I could have. I think financially it would have been more beneficial for me elsewhere. But I thought, no, I love it down here. As I'm living at home.
Yeah.
It's an hour from home.
Yeah.
I think we had my eldest daughter at the time. She'd have been 6 to 8 months old, maybe a year old.
Mm.
So we were settled. Mm. My wife was happy. Got all the family locally. So I just, it wasn't the right thing. And what I loved playing at Fratton Park, to be honest.
Right.
Right. I really loved it. So
for what reason particularly?
Everything, just everything about it. You know, the changing rooms are small.
Yeah.
You know, you can hear everything everyone's saying to you on the sideline. The atmosphere was brilliant.
Yeah.
Old John and his bloody bell. Brilliant. But the whole lot, right? Yeah. The whole, because from the age of 20, it was just brilliant. The atmosphere. The fact that there were 19,000 season ticket holders and the ground only held 21,000.
Yeah.
Right, so you knew every week it was going to be full.
So that was a big pull for you as well.
Yeah, but you also knew every week Manchester United didn't want to come down there.
No.
You knew the big teams didn't want to come down there.
Portsmouth's record against United was decent at Fratton Park, wasn't it?
Yeah. But that's what I mean. You knew that they didn't want to, it was never really the highlight of their calendar in the year, going to Fratton Park. I just loved the fact that we were underdogs for a period in time. It was the right decision for me. So yeah, I could have left, but didn't want to.
So it's curious to me, all those reasons you've given there, but you come across, obviously I don't know you that well, but you come across as someone who's pretty driven and pretty ambitious and wants to go to the top. Surely that came into your thinking when what would be potentially a bigger club wanted to sign you.
What did I want to do? What was I a footballer for, to play football, right?
Yeah.
So why I turned down moves in the past to go to a bigger club and maybe not and not play. I didn't want to not play.
But were you basically terrified of not playing?
No, I just didn't. It was about being part of something that I wanted to be part of and enjoying it. And I loved it at Portsmouth. But also the fact that football, I hate, the toughest times I've had in my career is being fit and not playing, right? Mm. So the best analogy I can give you, it's like you kneading dough over there all day on a Friday on the kitchen side.
Yeah.
And then someone else coming and putting it in the oven for you on a Saturday.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you're never actually getting to do your job.
Yeah. So you left Portsmouth in January, didn't you?
I did.
07.
Yeah.
Oh, 08, sorry. 08, 08. Yeah. Before Portsmouth won the FA Cup.
Yep.
How do you feel about that, looking back?
Not bothered, no. It was the right decision for me to leave at the time.
And did you...
Difficult one. But I'd nearly left two or three times before. The only time I really nearly left, I was in this house and a boyhood Tottenham fan and Martin Yole came in and Harry said, deal's fine, done.
Right.
So I was like, that's amazing. Dad's a Tottenham fan. Phoned him, Dad, it's done, I'm going to play for Tottenham.
Huh.
Brilliant it was. And the pub in the village, we didn't have a fax machine here, and this was before emails and everything, so everything was faxed over, right?
Yeah.
The deadline was 11 o'clock and I'm upstairs in bed, Mrs., and it must have been 10 o'clock and I said, I'm still waiting for this fax. I tell you what, I'm going to go to Steve, who's a landlord in the pub. I said, because he's got a fax machine. Yeah, great, okay. So I went down there and the phone signal was not great, right? So I stood outside. You know, when you haven't got any signal, for some reason, you hold your phone up in the air, right?
Yeah.
So I managed to get some signal and the phone went off. Gaffer, Tails, this was quarter to 11, Tails, I can't let you go. And at the time I was young, right? So I didn't kick up a stink. And I said, you're kidding me? I said, look, Harry. I said, look, Gaffer, this is Tottenham for me. I said, I'll go for less money. I'm not worried that, you know, I just want to play for Tottenham.
Yeah.
Can't let you go because the lad I want from Germany, we can't get him or something like this to replace you. I said, but I'm not even playing. I said, you got, I think it was at the time David Unsworth is playing. Yeah. I've spoken to Martin, your old deal's done. You know, I want to play for Tottenham. That's what I want to do. I think it was like a 5-year contract. I said, I want to play for Tottenham. Can't let you go. That's my one regret in football.
Right.
That I didn't push hard enough to go. And that was nothing to do with Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Right, it was nothing to do with that. It was the fact that it was Tottenham Hotspur and they were my team as a kid.
And do you blame Redknapp for that now?
No, you can't. No, because if I was in the same situation...
You still got on with him, okay?
Yeah. If I was in the same situation now as a manager, he has to look after Portsmouth, right?
Sure.
He has to look after Portsmouth's players. He has to look after the team. So it would have been the wrong decision for him to let me go and not have anyone in to replace me.
Mm.
and he didn't. So no, that was one thing, and then I ended up leaving in 08 anyway, in January.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You scored a great number of goals for Portsmouth and for Bolton as well. What is your favourite personally for Portsmouth? I'm not going to go too much into Portsmouth because it's not a Portsmouth show, but just for this match,
Are you sure? Are you sure?
Yeah. What's your favourite?
My favourite one for Portsmouth would probably be the one against Sunderland. And I'll tell you why.
Should have been goal of the season. That.
No, that's not why.
It is for me.
Because Laurent Robert was playing, right? And on the Saturday morning, Alan Perrin was manager.
Yeah,
and he pulled me in and he said, "Matty, look, Lauren said he's ill." Now, whether that was anything to do with the whole fact that he was playing against Sunderland and he had just signed from Newcastle, I don't know. He said, "But you're playing." Oh, okay. And yeah, went out. I think I ended up setting up two. Or
we won 4-1.
Two.
Yeah, yeah. We were a goal down.
We were a goal down. Scored two and set up two. Yeah. What a day that was. But I wasn't even meant to be playing.
But also, it was a brilliant goal as well.
It was a good goal, yeah. And what you know the only reason I shot? Because Dario Silva was injured.
Yeah.
And we had one up front and there was no one in front of me. So if you watch the goal again,
yeah,
we don't have a strike on the pitch.
Yeah. Right.
It got flicked round the corner to me and I looked up and I couldn't see anyone. So I thought, do you know what? Hit it. Mm. And Kelvin was off his line. Mm. And it flew in.
My memory of that sort of period, it's an amazing goal and everyone listening would have seen it. My memory is quite poor anyway, generally, but my memory of Portsmouth around that sort of time was that the turnover of players and the turnover of managers was so swift. It's difficult. I'd moved up to London by then, I wasn't going to every game. It's difficult to keep up with who's playing where and everything, but you were like a bit of a constant throughout that, until obviously when you moved on.
Yeah.
What, as a player, are you aware of that? Are you thinking this is not as consistent as it should be, or did you just get on with it?
Not that it's not as consistent as it should be, because that's football.
But you want a settled team as possible, presumably.
Of course you do, but that's not always, it's not always the case, is it? I think when you've got a manager in charge who one of his skill sets for Harry has always been signing players. He's got far more right than he's got wrong as well, let me say that, by the way. And that's throughout his career. Mm. He's been hugely successful at it. So he gets a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of unjust stick for being a wheeler dealer. Mm. What Harry does is he signs good players, and he signed a lot of good players that improved Portsmouth for us at the time. Was I bothered about that? Probably not, no.
Right.
Didn't worry me, no.
And and the answer to this might be none of your business or not at all. How do you look back on the Portsmouth era and what happened to them financially after that period? Do you look back on it with any sort of feeling at all?
Yeah. very, very unhappy about it, but it was, it's not for me. It wasn't...
I know it's not your decision or anything like that.
I wasn't part of it. I was just distraught, not for... And this is going to sound really bad. I was never distraught for the guys whose money it was. Mm-hmm. I was only ever distraught for the football fans.
Yeah.
Because all Portsmouth fans want now and have wanted then was success for their team. But success at what level? I don't think... I think Portsmouth got spoiled. We got spoiled a lot because we're in the Premier League. Mm. So the fans, I mean, got spoiled. Mm. But they're still going every week now.
Yeah. Yeah, actually. Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
So they're still going every week now.
Yeah.
I think they sold 17,000 season tickets in League Two.
Mm.
Right? League One, 17,000, 18,000. Mm. So that tells you that all they want to do is support the team. Mm. So they're the ones that suffered, not the ones whose money it was that went missing or that they lost. And we can't comment on that because we don't know.
Mm.
But it's the football fans ultimately who pay the price. Mm.
So how was your time at Bolton when you moved there? You were there for a few seasons, weren't you?
Three and a half, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
So was it not a big change for you? Did you have to move up there?
Yes, probably? I did, yeah. I think both my wife and I were very naive that we'd have to leave, and we left the house we live in now. So, yeah, it was tough.
Mm.
We had my daughter at the time. My son came along. I've got two children that were born in Manchester as well.
Right.
I've got two Mancunians.
Right, yeah.
Kids. Of the three, so no, it was good though. I enjoyed it, and it was the right. It was the right decision again. I had sort of three or four other options that would have been more beneficial to me financially, but football, and having turned down Gary Megson when he was manager at West Brom,
yeah,
right, and met him, and
did you like?
I liked him, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I wanted to play for him.
Yeah,
I remember we went up to Sunderland. I met Roy Keane. It was an experience.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you weren't tempted to sign for him?
No, not at the time, no. And then Middlesbrough with Gareth Southgate. And again, well, Gaz was playing up there. Gary O'Neill was playing up there.
Mm, yeah.
But it was a long way north, that.
I was so annoyed when Portsmouth let Gary O'Neill
go.
Yeah. I was so annoyed about
that. No, it was. Yeah, he did. Gaz had a good career. He's a good lad as well. Mm. So and Rangers were another one. But I decided that Bolton was the right one for me.
And around, I just realised I missed something out that I wanted to ask you. Around that time before you signed for Bolton, when you were playing more regularly for Portsmouth in that season we talked about, there was some outside talk of you getting called up for England.
Yeah.
You didn't ever hear anything about that?
I was on some sort of standby list or something, yeah.
Right. But how do you feel about that looking back? Obviously, you'd like to have played for him.
If I'd have got the move to Tottenham, I'd have played for England.
Yeah.
Right. Because if I'd have done the things that you do... I had it at Luton, right?
Yeah.
Couldn't get in the under-21s. Went to Portsmouth.
You're in there.
Straight in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not any different.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't any different as a player. Yeah. If you'd have done the things... And by the way, let me tell you, I have no sour grapes whatsoever.
Mm.
I think there was a lot of talk about it. And ironically, I saw Steve McLaren on the pro licence course he came and delivered about 4 or 5 months ago. And I asked him. I said, yeah, it was just, you know... Mm. So, yeah, it would have been nice. But I'm... not overly distraught about it.
Mm.
I think if I'm perfectly honest with you, I've had a far better career than I thought I ever would have had.
Right. So no regrets?
Nah, you can't have regrets. What's the point of having regrets in life?
Yeah. After Bolton, you're at West Ham and had a day out at Wembley.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, won the play. Was it Vaz Tay scored the winner?
He did, yeah.
Yeah. As an experience, again, getting promoted into the Premier League much later in your career, how did it compare to the time before?
First of all, I was ridiculous and naive and didn't realise how big of a football club West Ham was.
Right.
Really didn't.
Yeah.
It's the only time, do you know this, Luke, the only time in my career that I've gone to a football club where there's been expectation.
Right.
Because and I explained that, the expectation at Portsmouth when I joined was never to win the championship, right? Mm. We won it.
Yeah.
Then the expectation changes, so you just got to finish in the league.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
That's all we ended up doing. Bolton, we finished in the league, you know, to keep your status and this and the other. Portsmouth, similar. But we ended up always going above that. I think one season we finished eighth, did we, at Portsmouth?
Yeah.
And then Bolton, we ended up doing all right. So, yeah, join West Ham in the championship. The expectation was to get promoted, right, automatically. We had best squad in the league by far.
Big budget as well.
Huge budget.
Yeah.
Ridiculously big budget. Mm. Massive players.
Mm.
It were being paid Premier League wages.
Mm.
And we kind of hit the post.
Yeah, yeah.
Ended up finishing third. Played Cardiff in the playoffs, the championship playoffs, and battered them. Went into the went into the game against Blackpool thinking, right, we've made it here, lads. The expectation was, look, we've got to get promoted. Mm. I remember first 5 minutes, I was playing left back, and their left back hit a diagonal to the back post. And me being me thought, oh, I can chest this back to Greeny here.
Right.
And I've got a bit of a pigeon chest anyway. And I chested it back to Greeny, and it didn't get there because it was a warm day and all the water had come off. And he had to make a save, and he pushed it onto the post. Thought, right, here we go. And then, yeah, we went 1-0 up. Coley Carton scored a great goal. And then they battered us, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, battered us. Should have probably been 3 or 4 goals to the good.
Yeah.
And they weren't. And with 3 minutes to go, probably the most ripped man I've ever met in my life that I've ever played with, and can't wait to get his top off.
Yeah.
Scored a goal at Wembley and couldn't wait to get his top off and flex his muscles. So yeah. To be honest though, look, if I had a body like him, I'd have probably done the same. So scored that goal, and I just remember taking off and running around that place. It was just a huge relief. Massive.
So it was the overwhelming feeling was relief, really, because the expectation was so high.
Yeah, I didn't even go out that night, you know. So all the lads went out, and I, do you know what? I was that tired, sat in the dressing room afterwards, and I just, everything had left me.
Yeah.
Right? Everything had left me.
Yeah.
And I went upstairs, my missus, we had a box, and I went upstairs and I saw missus and the kids, and mum, dad, and all the family. And she said to me, so you going out? I said, no, I can't.
Really?
I said, I just need to go home.
And is that unlike you?
Well, all the lads were going out to celebrate.
Yeah.
I said, I've got to go home, love. So I just want to sit on the sofa, a glass of wine,
yeah,
and go to sleep. Because I was that tired, mentally and physically.
Who's the best player you played with?
Why does everyone always ask you this question? Did you Google this one and go, right, what questions can I ask?
No, not at all. I'm a man of very...
Because I can't answer the question, that's why. I can't answer the question.
Because it's interesting for football... I'll tell you, I'll answer your question. Because it's interesting for football fans to hear what players, proper players, rate. That's why. And it might just be someone had a particularly good performance against you or whatever.
Do you know what? The only way I can answer this, Luke, is that I've been fortunate enough to play with a lot of, in my opinion, fantastic players, right? But I left Luton in League Two playing at some of the grounds that we played at in League Two without, obviously I don't want to mention any of them because you might have some of the fans here, but they're not great. Mm. You know, I remember playing at the old, going to Halifax on a Tuesday night.
Mm.
So from there, to play in the Championship and to play with Paul Merson, Merce, you know, at that time, I'd only ever seen him on the TV.
Yeah.
I was playing with him. I just remember all I used to do, Luke, was run, and that ball ended up on my feet from him.
Every time.
I just used to run. So in the context of everything where I'd come from and where I was to winning the Championship within the space of 12 months, I'd say Merce, but technically... probably wasn't the best. I played with better players than him after that.
What made him so good other than his passing range and his vision?
Because everything about him was just... He never used to come out for a warm-up. Sit in and have a cup of tea and sit in the corner. With Harry.
Yeah.
His captain. 5 minutes.
Probably talking about horses, were they?
Yeah, maybe. But he'd be sat there and he wasn't even changed. And then he'd get changed, get ready, walk out, be the best player on the pitch every week. So for me, where I was at the age of 19, 20, that was probably... Without kind of going into loads of detail about other players I've played with.
Teddy must have been good as well.
He was, but he came the year after.
Yeah, that's right.
He came when we were in the Premier League.
He was sort of the replacement for Merson, really.
But he came in the Premier League, not when we were in the Championship.
So you were a bit more used to the level and the players around you at that point.
I suppose you, not more used to it, I suppose that I was more within the norm. It was kind of like, well, I wasn't playing at Luton in front of, or I wasn't playing at Halifax on a Tuesday night in front of 1,200 people.
Sure.
You know, if that makes sense.
It does, absolutely. And because you've had, I mean, the average professional footballer's career is a short career, generally speaking. You've had a long career. Yeah, you've had
Touchwood.
Yeah, you've had a long career. Well, you already have, really. You've had a great career already. What's changed in the years? You must have seen a lot of changes. What's changed since you first started as a footballer to what it's like now? Because obviously you're still very active, still playing and coaching and stuff now.
Lots. What would be the main thing that I would say? I think one of the main things that's changed is at times the mentality of young players, because we had no choice but to be tough, to deal with everything that was thrown at you. At the time, if you really wanted something, you wanted to be successful, then you had to work really hard for it. I'm not suggesting that the kids now don't work hard. I'm saying that as football clubs, remember the duty stays with the football clubs. Do you give them too much too early? 100% in my opinion. Well, they've not achieved anything. But you can't for one second blame the players.
Mm.
This is not me sitting here and saying it's their fault. It's not.
It's the environment that's been created.
Yeah. It's the football clubs that have made this problem. Mm. Who in their right mind is a 19-year-old footballer who's not played in the first team is going to turn down a huge contract that's offered to him? They're not. Mm. So you can't blame the kids.
Mm.
It's the football clubs.
Mm.
So it's this bubble that we've created that ends up parking loads of footballers,
mm.
right? Get parked. Yeah, they've got a few quid, but they're not playing football.
Yeah.
The whole point is to play football, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely, of course. So you think maybe the reserve league has to come back, you limit squad sizes, what?
I played reserve team football, you'd get 1,500 people come to watch a Kenilworth Road.
Yeah.
Don't get that now.
No.
It's development. No, it's not. It's a reserve team, but they call it development now.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully, the problem that I have is that the ones that, so you look at, you take Raheem Sterling for argument's sake, right? Playing at QPR, what, 16, 17?
Mm-hmm.
He's never one you're going to have to worry about.
Mm.
He's going to be successful,
mm.
right? What about the ones behind him?
Yeah.
That aren't Raheem Sterling. So they're the ones that need the nurturing. They need to go, but they're not playing in the first team there. So where do they go and play? They go out on loan to smaller clubs like Swindon, right? So they try and get a proper upbringing. It's a difficult thing because you can't... The problem you've got now as managers... at League 2 and League 1 level, it's as volatile as it is at the top level. So can you chuck young players in? Well, the argument is no. Because if you chuck them in, you're going to lose your job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
yeah,
then
yeah.
Everyone wants to see young players develop. Mm. So I understand why there's a development league and why there's development football. There's 100% a place for it. But my only worry is how many of those players get parked in there and then never have the careers that they probably could have and should have.
And how when we talk about big clubs with their academies, do you think that the academies at the top level are producing players that come in to hopefully playing at 17, 18 and just aren't prepared because they've not had any real experiences?
That's a difficult one. I just think that the bigger clubs have a duty of care to the players that don't make it at their football clubs, in my opinion.
Mm.
The duty of care is to prepare those young men for
the real
a career
world.
In football.
Yeah, yeah.
And that career in football might be at League Two.
Yeah.
It might not be a career in football whatsoever. But that's the duty of care for me.
Mm. At the moment, you're coaching, player coaching, of
I
course.
Am.
Do you, are you enjoying that? And two, do you have an ambition to be a manager? I mean, you mentioned the pro license earlier.
One, yes, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
Two, do I want to be a manager? Yes.
Okay.
Will I be a manager? I hope so. But if the opportunity arises, it's too soon for me at the moment.
Mm.
I've got an unbelievable opportunity now to carry on doing what I love, playing football, but also to coach and to gain a huge amount of experience from two very experienced men in our manager, Phil Brown, and the assistant, Neil McDonald, who I worked with at West Ham for 3 years. So, I've got a great opportunity. It works for me. Look, I'm at home.
Mm-hmm.
I'd sit down with the kids every night and have dinner, get to kiss them before they go to school.
Mm.
So I see, I have a good family work life balance, and that's important to me as well.
The reason I asked the question partly is because we talk a bit about young players and how they've changed, how different they are now. Obviously, if you became, it's partly your job now, but if you became a manager, a full time manager, it'd be part of your responsibility, obviously, to get through to those young players. And do you think that would be more difficult now than it would have been maybe back in the day when you were coming through?
Yeah, it's a lot more difficult. The reason it's a lot more difficult is because there's far bigger outside influences, right? So when I was coming up, I think I must have been 17 and I had a mobile, maybe 18.
Mm.
But there's no social media.
No.
I could make a phone call or I could text you.
Yeah.
Right? I might be able to send you a smiley face,
yeah.
But it'd be two dots. And a...
Matt, if you'd sent me a smiley face text when we were 19...
But you know what I mean. Yeah, you wouldn't have had a clip. But you're not...
I'd have been loving it, mate.
Yeah, but you get where I'm going.
Yeah, of course, right? Absolutely.
So the
outside
influences now shape...
Course.
I think people's lives.
Sure.
I would have never known at 18 what the equivalent 18-year-old was doing at Manchester United.
Mm.
I'd never have known that.
But now they
but
know
now,
and they can copy
I
it.
I can go on Instagram, now I can go on Twitter, now I can go on social media and find out just what you're doing.
Mm.
Right. So I think there's a perception of what a footballer has to do.
Yeah.
Right?
A way they have to behave.
So you look at, you see James Milner gets a load of stick, doesn't he, right?
Yeah.
On social media.
Yeah.
Because he's not your atypical footballer.
Yeah.
Right. So because he chooses to live his life differently, he gets stick. But going and bottle popping, that's what you got to do to be a footballer, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what everyone does.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, it's a load of rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah, right? yeah.
But then those influences, I can't... So you've got to think, you've got to remember this, right? You've got them in the building for what? 4 or 5 hours a day. What do they do for the rest of the day? You can't control that. I can't control what you do for the rest of the day. Mm. So if you're sat on your mobile phone checking Instagram, what?
Can't stop them.
I can't stop you. And if that's, but then that's influencing the way you lead your life. So how do I, as a young aspiring football coach, who is going to be, you know, in charge of helping develop players at Swindon Town next season and the young ones, how do you control what they do outside? You can't.
Mm.
So that comes down to them and their attitude and their mentality.
And their parents, of course.
Of course it does.
Yeah. So do is there any plan, is there any sort of system in place where the parents are talked to quite regularly by the football club and stuff?
I think at the bigger clubs there will be.
Yeah.
But we're a small academy, a Cat 3 academy, so funding is limited.
Yeah.
So we have a limited amount of staff, a limited amount of money that we can chuck at these things. Mm. But yeah, you've got to do everything you can within your means.
And do you think that type of attitude from these young players, if it pervades too much, is going to affect the quality of football they're going to be playing and the quality of football we're going to see, because the young players aren't going to be as focused now?
I hope not. Do you know what? I think I'm really excited at the moment about football in England, and I look at this, the national team.
Mm.
Spent 5-6 days in Toulon, watched on an FA Pro licence course.
That's the under-21 tournament they just won, right? Yeah, beat Scotland in the final.
Yeah, we went out and watched one of their games. We went out and watched them train, and I was impressed.
Hmm.
But then you look at now, the England team, and I think the reason that the nation now is so much more buoyant than they have been in years is because it's young boys that are playing.
Hmm.
Ashley Young is the oldest by a mile, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about a lad that I played with, Gary Cahill, who's 32. They're all saying he's past it. Hmm. Got to play the young boys, got to play the, you know. So that, I think, says that we're moving in the right direction in terms of young English footballers. You're managing people, right?
Mm.
Yeah, your tactics and every... I think the majority of people get tactics, right?
Mm.
But it's managing people.
Mm.
That's going to be the difficult thing. But yeah, I'm not going to do it at the moment, but it's definitely something that I'd like to do in the future. I'm going to enjoy playing this season.
Yeah, of course. Well, you've got at least another season of playing left. Yeah. Right. Listen, future England manager Matt Taylor, thank you very much for your time. It's been great talking to you. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.